They were in position. Etzel prayed silently. No doubt their retreat from the line had been marked. She just had to hope none of the heretics figured out what they were doing before they did it. She took a long, slow breath and gripped a grab rail. Main gun! Fire! Steel tread lurched with recoil. The demolisher shell hit home with a tremendous burst of light and sound, obscuring smoke spewing out in all directions from the impact. Treve gunned the engine and charged the breech on blind faith. Shrapnel clanged from the hull. Smoke shrouded the vid feeds. They plunged into it, still accelerating. Moretzen's sling rattled forward, suicidally fast. Etzel flinched at the thought of the shell slipping loose in the confines of the tank. At least it would be a quicker death than some. The loader got one hand to the wheel of the breech, but didn't spin it. Her augmetic arm locked in place, cradling the fat mass of the shell. Steel tread hit something, with force enough to rock Etzel forward in her seat. Thrown! She hissed. And then they were through. Hazy daylight strobed the vid feeds. The breech wheel spun, and the shell rattled home. Clang, clang, clang! The signal rapped against the hull. On Etzel's auspecs, she saw the hard returns of enemy armored vehicles within engagement range, flank on. She felt Treve haul tread hard about, leaning on the surprising grace of the Lehman Russ for all it was worth. They tilted. Etzel held her breath. The turret rotated even as Moretzen ducked clear of the breach's recoil. All guns, fire! Fear and adrenaline made Etzel shout. Captain Finn, attack! Steel tread let fly. The dust was still clearing as the las cannon beam strobed through it, sparkling with particulates, stabbing into the flank of the enemy Punisher. The tank deformed from within as its power plant went up. Its top hatch rocketed skywards, flames belched from its ruptured hull. Vaslav's demolisher shot was nothing short of sublime. The shell skimmed mere inches over the sloped rear hull plates of the Punisher and slammed into the side of the next enemy tank along. The ferocious explosion tore the machine open and flipped it sideways. Something else beyond it exploded in turn with a satisfying whoomp. Have some of that, howled Schallenbohr. Know the Emperor's wrath, cried Treve at the same time. Something hit them from above like a sledgehammer. Is that incoming fire? Snapped Etzel. Damage report, someone! Another impact followed, then another. The lumens died, then flickered back to life. Half the vid feeds cut out, the rest filled with dust. The power plant gave a strangled roar, then cut out too. The silence was cavernous and awful. What the bloody throne was that? Asked Vaslav. It took Etzel's stunned mind a moment to process why he sounded so wrong. In the ear-ringing quiet, she could hear the sergeant without the vox. Vero peered hard at his remaining vid feeds, then hissed in frustration. Rubble! Cadia's blood! I think we dislodged one of those statues from its alcove. It's come down right on top of us. Can we wriggle out, yeah? Asked Schallenbohr. Treve gave a mirthless laugh. The air exchanger shrines are choked. Tread's machine spirit just got beaten over the head with a stone cudgel. How long shall she languish in her blessed sufferings? Check hatches and get me a damage report, barked Etzel. How's our motive force? Reserve battery casket is enlivened, replied Treve. Even locked in sublime agonies, the tank retains 2 hours motive force. Yeah, can't open my hatch, called Schallenbohr. I've got mine a few inches open, but there's a damned great chunk of rock in the way, said Vero, clanging metal against stone as though to prove it. Etzel didn't bother to correct the gunner's lack of sir. They had bigger fish on the line right now. Etzel recognized her mind was wandering as shock tried to smother her. She fought the feeling, bit the inside of her cheek. Pain brought focus. Hoisting herself upward, she tried the top hatch, but found it buckled slightly inward. The release ring wouldn't turn all the way. "No go here," she reported.
"Damage is light, considering," reported Vaslav. "We've lost some of the vid feeds, and it looks like most of what we had lashed to the outer hull is a write-off. Armor's held, though. Nothing we can't beat out with a lump hammer."
"Thrown alive. How tough is this tank?" thought Etzel, grateful and amazed. Even a standard Russ might well have been crushed under that rubble fall. They were pinned, half buried, and trapped. But by the Emperor, they were alive. Her relief faded as she checked her remaining feeds and saw a traitor tank lumbering around the burning wrecks of its comrades. Its las cannons swung their way. Its turret gun depressed, lining up a killing shot. Etzel clenched her teeth. Explosions rocked the enemy machine, and it yawed off course before shuddering to a halt. Cadian soldiers spilled past it, the 5th Company Lehman Russ leading them out of the macro warehouse. Etzel breathed a sigh of relief, then Vox hailed the tank.
"Hammers, this is Lieutenant Etzel of Steel Tread. Do you have time to haul us out of this trap?" she voxed.
"Sorry,"
came the response, a man's voice with a nasal accent.
"This is Lieutenant Brovga of Lion Rampant. Captain Finn's ordered us forward to the bridge without delay. You already got your share of the glory. We'll get this done, then be back to drag you clear."
"Don't be too long about it, Lieutenant. We've only got 2 hours of motive force," Etzel replied.
"Watch us work, Tread. We'll be with you in less than half that."
"Good hunting. And throne's sakes, don't forget we're back here," said Etzel, and cut the connection. Quiet descended upon them, congealing until it filled the tank. The plan had been foolhardy, its execution glorious. Somehow, thought Etzel, that only made the ignominy of its conclusion worse. "Perhaps it is continual blasphemy and unworthiness of this crew that has brought us to this pass," opined Treve, shattering the silence with the tact of a drunk at a funeral.
"I've got a gun, yeah? I can actually shoot him," Chalambor suggested.
"Folly is the first resort of the fool," retorted Treve.
"Yeah, think we all know whose folly we've been stuck with, don't we?"
"Nix, shut up!"
This from Vero and Vaslav both at once.
"Hold your nerve," Etzel said, trying to reassert control before she lost it entirely. "Shut your mouths and stand by your stations. Emperor's vessel. Are you Cadians or penal legionnaires? Attend the remaining vid feeds. If we can do no more than watch as our comrades secure the bridge, then we will do that much and..."
"Sir!"
Vaslav's voice was a croak.
"Sergeant?" she snapped.
"Front right vid feed, sir," he breathed.
She looked and felt fear grip her anew. There was the bridge, all towering arches and fluttering banners over the fern-choked bloodwaters of the canal. There were the Cadians, several platoons worth of soldiers advancing with banners flying and armoured vehicles in their midst. And there, barring their passage like a monster from the darkest imperial scripture, was a towering bipedal war engine. Looming over the loyalist soldiery, the engine boasted a hunched and armoured carapace, jutting exhaust stacks, tattered pennants, and a telltale tilting shield emblazoned with an obscene device. A heretic knight. Etzel had only ever seen such super-heavy walkers once before, advancing into the breach during the siege of Yago. Those had been distant, a trio of loyalist war engines with fluttering pennants and silver and blue panoply. Even at a great remove, and knowing they were on her side, the size and fury of the knights had scared her as much as it had inspired. This machine was infinitely worse. It might have stood 50 feet tall had it raised itself to its full height. Instead, it stooped forward like a beast. Its armour was pearlescent white, edged with shimmering silver. This only served to highlight the wet muscle and exposed tendons stretched across its spiked hull. Where its arms would have supported cannons or blades, they instead tapered to gleaming metal points, like impossibly huge needles. Its feet were the same, their points driven into the ground so that it balanced on them in a way that didn't look possible for something so big. The armored plates of the knight's helm were splayed open, each hauled painfully back by lengths of hooked chains. They exposed a wet mass of flesh and eyes, drooling maws and shuddering cilia. It took Etzel a moment to realize she was emitting a low moan of horror. The traitor knight swung a dreadful pin limb in a scything arc. Cadian soldiers were torn apart at its passing. A chimera flipped off the side of the bridge, trailing flame. The thing threw back its head and screamed, and it took everything Etzel had not to slip from her seat and cower. It waded into the Cadians. Blood and bodies fountained. Weapons fire flashed from a shield of lurid green energy that shimmered about it. The knight stamped and stabbed, now tottering on two spear feet, now falling forward to skitter on all four blade points. Each time it ripped one of its limbs skyward again, trails of gore spattered in its wake. "What is it?" Schellenbohr's voice was little more than a whisper, but it was enough to drag Etzel from her reverie. She fumbled, hit the vox rune on the third try, tore her eyes from the vid feed. "First Lieutenant Askarov, anyone who can hear this? There is a super-heavy enemy asset engaging on Seraph Bridge. It's a knight, but it's nothing like I've ever seen. First Lieutenant Askarov, First Lieutenant Aswald, Captain Brezhik, anyone, please acknowledge." "Throne? Now what?" Etzel forced her eyes back to the feed, not liking the fear in Vero's voice. The knight had waded deep into the Imperial lines, but the Cadians were fighting back with the desperation of cornered prey. Beyond them, rolling up the line of the canal from deeper in the Kostmara's sprawl, came a thick bank of mauve fog. It moved fast, swallowing up the ruined buildings, smothering everything. "It's travelling against the wind," said Vaslav. The fog rolled over the battle on the bridge and surged hungrily up the banks towards Steel Tread. When the vox squawked, everyone in the tank jumped.
"Hammer blow, repeat! Hammer blow!"
barked First Lieutenant Askarov.
"Visual confirmation of Baragor in Sector 753. Repeat, visual on primary. Be advised, Geskens report the target is Heretic Astartes and is engaged in some manner of heathen ritual. We've got a Crimson Class Maledictum warning from the Psychana. Maintain your prayers."
"Sir, we can't rally. We're pinned under rubble," Etzel replied, fighting to keep her voice level. "There is an enemy super heavy engaging in this sector, sir, and there's some kind of fog rolling over the advance."
"Confirm. We have the fog at this location also. Visibility poor. Possibly some byproduct of whatever the primary... it..."
Askarov's transmission cut out, only to be replaced by the desperate voice of Captain Finn.
"The fog! Throne alive, stay out the fog! Don't breathe it in! Don't breathe—"
He was cut off, but the vox stayed open, muffled, indistinguishable sounds and static filling the inside of the tank.
"Sir, what's happening?"
Vero's voice wavered, and Etzel found herself wondering how old he actually was under all that grime. She shook her head slowly. Finn's vox mic was still transmitting. She heard running footsteps and screams. Next came howls, and gibbering, and the crack of bone. Weapons discharged, and she saw them light the fog from within. Vaslav reached out with a shaking hand and worked the vox control slave to his station.
"Vapor everywhere! How's it getting in, Sergeant? Patch that hole, someone! Fall back! They've gone mad! Where's the captain? Where's... he's coming off the corpse piles! Repeat, if anyone can..." "Praise the Dark Prince. Praise him with your flesh. Praise him with your pain."
A horrible certainty gripped Etzel. "Can we pressurize this vehicle?" she asked.
"What does that matter?"
asked Vaslav, his tone so bitter that it gave her pause. Didn't you hear? Heretic Astartes, Cadia's Bane, we're done.
The fog rolled closer with indecent eagerness, an avalanche of hungry clouds intent on swallowing them whole.
For the Empress's sakes, someone tell me, can we pressurize this tank?
Barked Etzel.
If we've buttoned up, sir, then by the Emperor's grace we can, said Treve. Sir, I can't.
She heard frantic scuffling from Vero's station, the rasp of metal on stone. She remembered his side hatch, pushed partway open. In Etzel's mind, she saw the mauve fog flooding into the tank through the open hatch, saw it engulfing them all. Horror would follow.
Vero, get that hatch shut now, she barked. I can't, sir, it won't bloody...
Something big moved below Etzel. There was a loud rasp, then a firm clang.
Closed, said Moretzin.
Pressurizing now, said Treve,
fingers dancing over the runes at his station.
Steel tread is old, sir. Her blessed flagellation may have torn a seal or compromised a weld.
The Emperor protects, said Etzel, unsure if she was reassuring her crew or herself. There came a series of dull clunks and clicks from all around them, followed by a slow groan. Etzel swallowed hard and moved her jaw until her ears popped. She glanced at the buckled hatch above her.
Integrity?
She asked. The fog was almost on them.
Amber, said Treve.
Etzel's stomach lurched.
What's wrong? She asked. I don't know, sir. Something.
Frantic scuffling from below.
Here, cried Shallenbor. Crack in the weld! Sealing it!
Etzel craned around to look as the sponson gunner wrenched open a hazard locker and pulled out a canister of sealing unguent. Muttering prayers, Shallenbor ripped the tab from the canister and shook it. The fog rolled over them, smothering and silent. The vid feeds turned to mauve gloom.
Nix!
Hissed Vero, frantic. Shallenbor pushed the blessed nozzle against the cracked weld, even as the first mauve tendrils quested through it. She depressed the applicator rune, and the unguent squirted out to fill the tiny gap. It set at once, with a sizzling sound. Moretzin grabbed Shallenbor under her arms and hauled the wiry gunner back, away from the faint puff of mauve gas that had invaded their sanctum.
Rune's green, called Treve.
Etzel exhaled slowly. Vero let out a breath he'd been holding. Vaslav closed his eyes. Shallenbor disentangled herself from Moretzin, while Treve checked his instruments, then rechecked them. Silence reigned for long, thudding heartbeats, before Etzel said,
Bloody well done, Gunner Shallenbor.
Now what, sir?
Asked Moretzin. Vaslav, get me an Orspex feed on the Renegade Knight. Everyone else, stay quiet. If the Emperor is with us, it won't know we're here.
We can't just sit here until our air runs out, sir, protested Treve. The arch-heretic is at hand. Our duty is clear.
You want to get out there and give us a push, Dregger, hissed Shallenbor.
You'd have to get the hatches open first, Vero pointed out. And it's not like we could do that now, even if we wanted to. We're stuck.
Fighting to steady her breathing, Etzel tried to hail Askarov. No response. She tried again. Nothing. She cycled the vox, sending out hails to her squadmates, to Aswold, to anyone whose frequency she knew. Some channels opened onto static or screaming, others to awful sounds of crunching gristle and saliva.
Whatever happened, it happened to everyone, she thought.
Baragor is here, all right, and he's beaten us. Whatever witchery he's unleashed, it's rolled over the attack and...
thrown alive. What if it is everyone? What if this is everywhere?
She took her shaking hand away from the vox panel. She wanted to try Aswald's frequency again, but was terrified of what she would hear if she got through. She swallowed with a dry click, closed her eyes, and willed away hysteria. Schallenbohr's hiss brought her back to herself with a jolt.
Anyone else see that, yeah?
What? Asked Treve.
I do not... There!
Now Etzel saw them. Ghostly shapes resolving from the murk. Spinebacks, and with them a band of their mutant ogrins. They were walking untouched through the mauve fog, and their leader was pointing straight at the mound of rubble that had trapped Steel Tread.
Act 2. The Hunt. Chapter 7. Choices.
Be silent, hissed Etzel. Quiet the vox. Sergeant, issue rebreathers.
She felt like a prey animal, cornered in its burrow. She glanced about at her crew. They were all staring fixedly at the vidfeeds. Vaslav showed no signs of obeying her order. Rather than risk speaking again, she reached down with one booted foot and gave him a firm shove. The sergeant spun with an expression of such sudden fury that Etzel almost recoiled. Instead, she matched his scowl and nodded pointedly at the enviro-hazard rack above his station. She could see the objection in his eyes. What use were rebreathers against sorcery? Etzel motioned again. Expression thunderous, Vaslav wrenched the rebreathers from their rack and thrust them at the crew. Etzel's, he all but threw at her. She held his gaze until he looked away and turned back to his station. Etzel pulled the masked strap over her head, clipped its bottle to a loop on her tank suit, checked the oxygen flow, and muttered the appropriate prayer.
Spirit of rebreather, giver of life, thank you for the breath in my lungs. May your seals hold true, and the Emperor smile upon you.
All this she did automatically, but her mind was on Vaslav and his reaction to Askarov's words. She had said Heretic Astartes, Adeptus Astartes, the God Emperor's angels. His will made manifest on the galaxy, turned traitor. Etzel's mind reeled at the implications. Denial sought to assert itself. The sergeant didn't seem to have any doubts, that was for sure. Etzel's hand crept to her sidearm. On the monitors, the spineback's leader gestured again. His followers spread out, some forming a perimeter while others approached Steel Tread. The two ogrins lumbered with them. They seemed to grow to fill the vidfeeds, each hefting a silver lance. Those weapons the crew had mocked earlier now set a panic in her throat. Their seeming failure to deal noteworthy damage to the other tanks had been a preamble to Baragor's killing fog, a point of ingress for his witchery. New figures burst from the murk. Etzel got a glimpse of Cadian heraldry and thought for an instant that salvation was at hand. Yet the uniforms were torn and darkly stained. Their owners sprinted towards the heretics without thought for cover discipline. A few scrambled on all fours, like beasts. Their flesh was livid and gouged with crimson runnels, torn by what looked like bite marks. One had half his face hanging off in a wagging flap of skin. The Cadian's eyes bulged in their sockets, purple cysts about to burst. Black wells radiated out from them, as though the guardsman had been tattooed by an artistic madman. All this Etzel saw in the space between one heartbeat and the next. Then the heretics' guns rippled. Tainted Cadians fell. Some lay thrashing or crawled onward, until they were shot again. The Ogrins showed no signs of having noticed the exchange. Etzel watched their lances until the weapons were too close to remain in shot.
"If you've got a plan, sir, time's running out," whispered Schallenbohr. Acidly through her rebreather.
Etzel's mind thrashed like an animal trapped in a sack.
Fight?
They couldn't disembark to do so, and even if they could, it was doubtful the rebreathers would help. What if the fog was absorbed through the skin? What if you couldn't stop witchery simply by breathing clean air? Her crew could perhaps wait for the enemy to burst holes in the hull, then fire out through the gaps until the fog took them. but the spalling from two lance blasts would wreak havoc. Whatever resistance they put up would be pitiful. Attempting to escape on foot posed the same issues. No way out, and no safe air to breathe. That left trying to reawaken Steel Tread, which Treve had said wasn't possible. The driver might be an insufferable fanatic with a borderline flagellation fetish, but over the last few days, she'd come to trust his abilities. If he said the tank's intakes were smothered, then she believed him, and Tread would choke on its own fumes long before it somehow shouldered its way free of the rubble. Operating the guns on casket power would drain their motive force all too soon and leave them helpless. Besides, either way would make a lot of noise. Her gaze strayed in the direction of the bridge, lost in the fog. Etzel forced herself to focus on one nightmare at a time. There came a dull creak from outside the hull, then a rasp of stone against metal. The sound came directly above Etzel's head, making her flinch down in her seat and unclasp her holster. Another clang, louder this time, from near the tank's haunches. She looked at her crew, who returned her questioning stare. An impact on the side of the hull. Etzel's heart leapt into her mouth as she waited for the bang. The wild ricochets of spalling inside the tank. The flesh and blood mist torn from the crew she'd led into this trap. Instead, there was another grating sound, then a crunch like stone on stone. Steel Tread settled a little lighter on its springs.
"They're digging us out," hissed Vero. "Why?" asked Chalambor.
"Fun," suggested Moretzin. "Interrogation, torture. Clear a hatch, pull us out and..."
She made a grisly wet noise suggestive of violence.
"Or maybe they think we're all dead in here, and they're going to take trophies," growled Vaslav.
"Today is the day we die." Etzel swatted the thought like a fly. She did not know who else was gone, and she would not die in such damned ignorance. She felt the Segoan flask in its pouch and realized there would be no one to toast her last voyage. Throne. The only person she'd told about that custom wasn't even one of her own crew. She wondered where Aswald was in this catastrophe.
"Treve," she whispered. "How much rubble would they need to shift for Tread to break out?"
He leaned aside so she could see his controls. One of the indicator bulbs for the air exchanger shrines was flickering between red and amber.
"More than they have, sir. But this is a doughty machine and faithful. Even choking, she may have the strength to wrench free if they relieve a little more of her burden. In our sufferings, are we strongest?"
"What are we waiting for, then?" asked Vero,
then belatedly added,
"Sir?"
"We get one chance at this," said Etzel. "I'm not going before the Golden Throne and telling the God Emperor we died because someone lost their nerve."
If Vaslav felt her eyes on him at that moment, he didn't show it. Chalambor muttered something Etzel didn't catch. Another thump, another clang, harsh laughter muffled by the hull. A vidfeed cleared as another sizable chunk of rubble was heaved aside. That must be enough for the heretics to wrench open a hatch, she thought. She didn't dare leave it longer.
Did she?
Treve gestured again. The amber bulb had turned green. One of three shrines clear. Etzel willed Steel Tread's machine spirit not to let them down.
"Ready at your stations," she ordered.
Another thud from outside. Something clanged hard against the dented turret hatch.
"Now!"
Treve roused the power plant. It coughed once, twice, then roared like a dragon. Vero's sponson bolter thumped. Blood splashed over vidfeeds. Steel Tread strained. Its tracks creaked. Its hull groaned.
"Come on! Come on!"
On the feeds, Etzel saw an Ogryn heft its lance and draw it back.
"Throne, come on!"
she shouted, rocking forward in her seat as she urged the tank to free itself. Rubble clattered and spilled. Steel Tread moved.
Shalimbor's gun roared to life, and the Ogryn was punched off his feet by a barrage of shells. Heretics spun in shock as the tank charged them down. They vanished under Tred's tracks, crushed to bloody pulp as the Demolisher burst from its rubble tomb and roared into the fog.
"Orders, sir?"
asked Treve over the vox. Etzel had this one moment to decide their course. Could this really be Yarrow Canyon all over again? Askarov's last order had been to rally what force they could and try to kill Baragor. But she knew duty, and she knew folly. Whatever chance there had been of slaying the heretic leader was gone. They couldn't be the only loyalist crew left, and whatever strength remained of their attack force, it fell to officers like her to preserve it. Her duty now was to get her tank and her crew out of the engagement zone, then to get on the vox and determine a rally point. She wouldn't martyr them for nothing. "Sergeant, plot me a course west out of Kostmara's sprawl, shortest route."
"Sir, shouldn't we form up on the first lieutenant?"
This from Vero. She ignored it, but Vaslav didn't.
"Why? To what end? Heretic Astartes? They were the death of my world, the bane of Cadia, and you think we can do anything to stop them here? Sergeant, if you've a true Cadian bone in your body, pull yourself together. The Emperor has entrusted us with the lives of this crew and this tank, and we are going to preserve them. Plot me a route."
Vaslav didn't reply, but to Etzel's immense relief, a series of runic waypoints blinked to life on the Oort specs. Steel Tread turned in the roadway and began to accelerate. Suddenly it rocked on its springs as something huge slammed into the ground scant feet from the hull. In the feeds, Etzel saw a tapering column of silver, streaked with gore, driven point first into the ferrocrete.
"Throne!" she gasped.
The titanic lance soared skyward again, vanishing through the murk. Treve swerved across the roadway, grinding rubble and corpses as he went. Steel Tread shuddered with what Etzel realized were monstrous footfalls.
"Throne o' the sump rotten sated Emperor!"
Shalimbor was screaming.
"A demon! A demon is come!"
cried Treve. The silver needle stabbed down again. Treve wrenched at his control levers. The knight's limb barely clipped Steel Tread, yet still it was enough to deafen them with the metal-on-metal scream, and to leave a dent in the hull mere inches from Etzel's head. Bulbs lit up red across instrument panels. Sparks erupted somewhere below her. Vero cried out. Stowage and shells rattled madly.
"Get us clear!" shouted Etzel.
Treve needed no urging. He gunned the tank's power plant, hammered his control levers, and stomped his pedals. Steel Tread executed a tight turn one way, lurched forward, swung back the other, and ploughed through a mound of corpses that loomed from the fog. Carrion figures bounced across the tank's hull like rag dolls, their limbs and rictus grins filling the vid feeds. The icon at the heart of the heap vanished under the tank's tracks. Then Steel Tread was clear and accelerating along the processional. Blinded by fog, Treve drove with reckless speed, praying aloud all the while for the Emperor to bless them with a clear path. At any moment, that monstrous pillar of sharpened silver could punch down through the hull and pinion the tank like an insect. Etzel held her breath. It didn't come. Somewhere behind them, she heard the knight's soul-curdling roar, yet even as it howled, so it receded. Still, Etzel didn't believe it until the sounds of the rampaging war engine had faded completely into the muffling fog. At last, she slumped back in her command seat with a gasp of relief, and listened to the roar of the power plant mingle with the sick thudding of her heart. Hours had passed, and night was casting its shroud across the land by the time they stopped. The threatened eclipse storm still hadn't arrived, though Etzel had felt pre-shocks judder through her as the grim afternoon withered away to evening. Like a building migraine,
The longer it held off, the worse it would be when it finally hit. It was just more weight below the waterline, as they said on Sago. Steel Tread sat dormant in a jungle clearing. Within it, the crew huddled in a cocoon of mutual shock. Etzel had ordered all non-essential systems powered down, and their locator beacon rendered quiescent. They had ploughed a wide enough trail through the undergrowth as it was, no need to provide pursuers with any more signs of their presence. It would have helped, perhaps, to get outside, cut some fronds, and lay rudimentary camouflage over their tank, yet Etzel wasn't letting anyone open a hatch until they had to. Bad enough that they'd had to dispense with their rebreathers once the oxygen ran out. Logically, she knew that they had left the fog behind, miles back. Certainly it hadn't been visible since they'd escaped the outskirts of the sprawl. But they knew nothing about the dark powers Baragor had unleashed. It would be little use escaping their doom, only to let their guard down, step outside and discover the corruption had somehow clung to their hull. Etzel told herself she was being prudent, but it became harder to ignore her crew's discontent by the minute. They wouldn't be able to sit in here forever, she knew that. The pressurization system could only stay on so long lest it drained their dwindling fuel reserve. Moreover, Tread had taken a furious pummeling. Vero had already asked twice to be allowed outside to inspect the damage. She didn't think she could deny him a third time. The fog of sweat and tension was so thick inside the tank, it was as though Baragor's miasma had found its way in after all. Vaslav hunched over the Vox unit, staring fixedly at the dials as he scanned frequency after frequency. He hadn't spoken to anyone since their escape. Closing in upon himself like folded parchment. Static hissed in choppy monotone. Vero had opined that the tank's primary Vox antenna had taken a hit when the knight clipped them, but, of course, until he was allowed outside, neither he nor Treve could confirm it. Without an engine seer on hand, there was slim chance of repairing it even if they did. Moretzin was propped against the warm metal of the power plant, snoring softly. Vero sat, back to his station, mechanically chewing a ration block, as though he'd been assigned the task as penance. Schallenbohr stared at her monitors and scanned the darkened jungle fretfully, like she could actually see anything out there without lumens or night sight filters. Etzel felt the tension simmering within her tank, resentments and despair forming convection currents within its pressurized vessel. She couldn't focus on them. Exhaustion left her little energy to do more than slither deeper into a self-recriminatory spiral. She had got them clear, tank intact, crew alive. But she had run, again, a coward in the God Emperor's sight. Worse, the longer they spent without contact, the more Etzel's hope withered that other loyalist forces had survived. It was Treve who broke the fragile peace. He set aside the primer, over which he had been silently praying, then turned in his seat to survey them all like a turret gun tracking targets. Perhaps, when one of true faith warns of omens in future, you will find it within yourselves to master your arrogance and listen? Treve addressed the crew. There again, perhaps our travails are the Emperor's will, and our shared punishment for that very sin. Yeah? Well, maybe if you'd got clear and not dropped half a building on us, we'd have been able to get stuck in. Schallenbohr offered him her dismissive three-fingered gesture. Treve's sneer dripped self-satisfaction. Even Etzel found herself wanting to punch him. What would you know? He crowed. Faithless hive trash! I didn't hear your protests when we turned tail and fled. The chewed end of Vero's ration block flew across the confined space and hit Treve in the eye. The driver recoiled, spluttering with indignation. Schallenbohr cackled loud enough to startle Moretz in awake. Shut your mouth, spat Vero. How dare you? Treve's voice had risen to a strangled screech. You, who tamper with the secrets of the Omnissiah? It was you that corrupted the tanked machine spirit with your tech heresy?
Oh, pull the Aquila out your ass, Treve, said Vero.
Treve snarled and half rose from his seat.
Try it, duck squirmer, said Shallenbore. Her hand dropped to the knife at her belt. For throne's sakes, all of you stop this, snapped Etzel.
She glanced in Vaslav's direction, but he was wholly absent, just a hunched shape limned by the glow of the vox dials.
Oh, yeah, hide behind the new boss, Isaac. Lick our boots and see where it gets you, jeered Shallenbore. I beseech the God Emperor to forgive the laxity this crew has shown in tolerating your filthy tongue, spat Treve.
Furious, Etzel made to clamber down from her seat. If it took the issuing of punishment details to whip this crew into line, then it was past time she started doling them out.
Enough!
Muretzin didn't raise her voice, but it filled up the close space of the tank. They all looked at her, except for Vaslav.
Commander told you to stop. Want to wind up getting lashes? Stop acting like some pack of underhive killers. We were trained better. Got a problem with gangers now, yeah?
I've got a problem with idiots who...
Commander,
said Vaslav, interrupting Muretzin's retort.
It's patchy, but I've got a signal.
Chapter 8. The Signal. The crew huddled around Vaslav's station. The argument of moments before was, if not forgotten, at least thrust aside for now. Vaslav hunched over his station, tweaking dials as he tried to boost the signal. Etzel craned forward, frustration urging her to shove Vaslav aside and take a turn at the dials. Words flitted from the emitters like ghosts through a barrage of static.
Operation Yorton, compromised. Catastrophic malefic event. Industrial. Sprawled at approximate 1650 hours. Triggered by primary target, visually confirmed. Sight and assailed. 49th Cadian. Gesgan 43rd Light Infant. 80% casual. Primary target lost. Assault group broken. Survivors scattered. Established rally points. Be considered compromised. New rally coordinates. Imperatus Regnum. Repeat, Imperatus Regnum. Not this message. Repeat. Authority stamp command. Van Calder, Kate 49th. Operation Yorton Command.
Vaslav hissed with frustration as the signal slipped like a fish from a line and was gone. He worked the dials with increasing impatience, then sat back and thumped a fist against his station. The crew looked at one another, then at Etzel. She imagined her expression was as conflicted in that moment as theirs.
80% casualties. Did you hear that?
Treve's voice was soft with shock or reverence. Etzel couldn't tell which.
But we're not the only ones left, said Vero. There's survivors. There's a rally point.
If it isn't a trap, growled Vaslav. If they've broken our codes.
Then we would be riding into a trap, said Etzel, pulling a folded sheet of plastic parchment from a pocket of her tank suit.
She smoothed out the briefing document she had received, what felt like a year ago at Mandraiga Command, and scanned swiftly down it. She stabbed a finger at the codes transcribed there. Imperatus Victus Regnum. That's Sector 1167. But what was the last element? Did anyone hear? Was it Nox or Noctus? Silence.
It could have been Noctus, offered Vero.
Etzel balled her fist, crinkling the parchment, then shoved it back in her pocket. It's enough to be going on with. The first three elements get us close.
Sir, how much variance is there between Nox and Noctus on those codes?
Asked Muretzin. Could be as much as 5 miles, admitted Etzel. But if we don't find them at the first point we try, then we search from there.
if we're not overrun by foes, and if the codes aren't compromised, muttered Vaslav.
Boss, not shutting you down or nothing, but how's that worse than we already are?
Schallenbohr asked the sergeant.
What else do you want to do? Turn round and go back to the sprawl? Chance running south through swamps in a battle tank without them Geskens picking us out a safe route? No disrespect, but we'd be dead or sunk pretty quick.
In such an hour, faith is strength, and despair but mortal frailty, opined Treve.
Muretzin, what do you think?
Asked Vaslav. The loader's augmetics whined softly with her shrug.
As I've already clarified, this is not a democracy, said Etzel. The transmission we have received carries official authentication codes and constitutes a direct order from our regimental commander. Emperor willing, that means he has made it out of that disaster alive. Our duty is to follow his orders.
There was silence as they digested this.
Etzel felt suddenly as though she were balanced at an apex, and that the moment could tip either way. But the message offered hope, however slender. She could use that to hold her crew together. It was time to give them a shove before they slid back into infighting and morale collapsed altogether.
Depressurize and disembark. Treve, full inspection. Unpack the auto warning. I don't want you pulling the cowl plate on the power plant, only for the eclipse storm to break and drown our engine. Muretzin, stock take. We've fired plenty of rounds, and thrown knows we were low enough on fuel before all this. Vero, Schallenbohr, take las carbines from the arms locker and patrol the perimeter. Stay in visual. I don't want anyone picked off if we get visitors. If you haven't already, all of you rehydrate and take a ration block.
What about stims, sir? Asked Vero.
Etzel paused. None of them had slept worth a damn for the best part of 2 days. Their edge was blunted. Exhaustion wouldn't help frayed nerves. There again, being hyped on combat stims wouldn't ease their tempers either. Yet there was no time for rest. Emperor alone knew how they'd avoided the enemy for as long as they had, but Etzel wouldn't see her tank caught at bay while her crew slumbered. Mzenwe would have asked her what other options they had, trusting that she would spot one if it were there. The commander had trusted her judgment. Etzel thought that perhaps it was time she started to do so as well.
Single dose each. That's it. We'll take rack time at the rendezvous. Coordinates aren't more than a day's ride away.
Schallenbohr scowled, cracked her knuckles, opened her mouth to speak. Etzel did not let her.
We have all just been through rough waters. We've seen and heard things that have tested not just our courage, but our sanity also. I do not blame any of you for being tired, frightened, and on edge. But we are a crew, and all we can rely on is one another. If any of you are planning to undermine that bond at a time like this, then you can get out and walk to the rendezvous. The enemy are out there, not in here. Understood? The next insubordinate will be digging and chem-washing our latrine pits for the next month. Dismissed!
The crew busied themselves at once, yet all hesitated to break the tank's seal by opening a hatch. Vaslav had bent over his station's vox controls again and was frowning mightily, as though hoping to dissuade anyone from troubling him. Etzel was not about to let him off so easily.
Sergeant Vaslav, meet me outside in 10 minutes. Bring a chem lantern and our chart parchments.
When, a minute later, Treve reported that internal pressure had been normalized, Etzel took a firm grip of the turret wheel, spun it decisively, and clambered out. She did not, thankfully, lose her mind to heretical sorcery. So, there was that, at least. The air was fresh and cool. It felt to Etzel like plunging into clear water after the sweat-thick fog of the tank. She smelled rich soil, mingled with rotting vegetation, and something that reminded her of the greenhouses of her parents' agriplex.
She heard insectile chittering, distant whooping calls, the susurrus of stirring undergrowth. It might have been pleasant if not for the biting insects that closed in on her, and the constant risk of gun-wielding heretics bursting from the undergrowth. For the next few minutes, Etzel busied herself overseeing the crew as they emerged cautiously from the tank. She helped Treve deploy the telescopic poles of the auto-awning. She held a stablight for Moretzin while the loader inspected the crushed remains of fuel barrels whose contents had long since drained away. She noted a flattish rock a little way from the tank, where she could spread the charts for her conversation with Vaslav. Throughout, Etzel felt pulses of unnatural gravity pushing and pulling at her. Some of them seemed to thump through her body like an invasive heartbeat. Others made her ears pop, or her center of balance waver. Each pulse made the jungle echo to distant shrieks and howls, and caused foliage to rustle so loudly that Vero and Schallenbohr halted and raised their las carbines towards the tree line. Etzel exchanged an uneasy glance with Vero as he passed her, seeing her thoughts reflected in his eyes. The eclipse storm was almost upon them, an unnatural onslaught of fluctuating gravity and unnatural weather that would play havoc with machine spirits and put them all in even more peril. Etzel sighed and leaned against Steeltread's flank. The tank's paint was scorched, its hull scored and dented. Yet for all the punishment it had taken, the venerable vehicle was still going strong. She patted the tank, her tank, and whispered to its machine spirit, "Thank you for getting us out of there alive. I'm going to ask a lot more of you yet. I pray you keep and aid us." Vaslav emerged from the tank, dead on the 10-minute mark. Under one arm, he carried several rolled charts. In his other hand was a shuttered chem lantern. His expression was that of a man going to battle. Etzel motioned towards the rock, and they walked to it in silence. Her heartbeat was heavy in her chest. She reminded herself that she held his rank only a week earlier, and she knew its duties. Confrontation was part of command. Vaslav spread the charts out on the rock, weighting their edges to prevent gravity pulses from fluttering them into the air. "Have you assessed an optimal route, Sergeant?" asked Etzel. "For what good it will do us," he said, stabbing a finger at the chart. "This is us. You've got precious little intelligence of anything beyond our original route of advance. So my recommendation is to hold to it while we're navigating this Gwassa jungle. Where the trees grow this thick, the land has to be dry and firm enough to accommodate them. If we stick to the jungle, we avoid the swamps. You see?" Etzel nodded, gestured for him to continue. "We follow the advance route north out of the Mandraga Delta until we reach the Orphide Hab Belt. Should be there just before dawn, of course. If we've avoided the enemy that long, it'll be a miracle."
"Or we may have encountered more loyalists and joined forces," countered Etzel.
"We were already out on the flank, sir," pressed Vaslav. "We ran west out of the sprawl, away from friendlies. Can't see us factoring in anyone's consolidation efforts all the way out here."
"Even still," Vaslav gave a noncommittal grunt, then continued.
"Our best route on from the Orphide Belt is the old silo road that exits Sector 831 and cuts through the Verva's chem yards. If we're lucky, then some of the macro hauler transit ways will still be in a condition to take Tread's weight."
His finger moved across the map. Etzel followed it, quietly relieved that the sergeant had at least showed diligence in his wayfinding. The route didn't necessarily look the safest, but it was expedient. She would have suggested it herself, in his position.
"From the yards, if we're somehow still alive, then transitway 816 takes us through the Rose warehousing hub." Vaslav pressed on. "It's a straight shot from there to our approximate rally point, which I should note puts us amongst the foothills of Mount Yorick,
and uncomfortably close to the enemy stronghold.
We have more immediate problems to worry about, said Etzel. I've not had Moretzin's tally yet, but we expended plenty of ammunition in Kostmaris. It's also patently clear our fuel reserves won't take us all the way to the rendezvous.
Throne, I know, snapped Vaslav. If the bloody reserve tankers had caught up as they were supposed to, it wouldn't be a problem. But by all means, pin it to my chest, like Moretzin couldn't have sorted this out back on the line.
I don't seek to lay blame, Sergeant. My point is that we need to look out for refueling opportunities as a matter of urgency. There is a Munitorum depot marked here amongst the Orphide Belt, so I suggest we try there first. If we are unsuccessful, then we'll need to be ready to siphon from any abandoned vehicles we find amongst the chem yards, or on Transitway 816.
All right, yes, agreed,
he replied, his tone waspish.
But you didn't need my input to decide any of this. You're the commander, not me.
If the sergeant wanted to get to the point, Etzel thought, then she was glad to oblige. Gunnery Sergeant Vaslav, I require your input not just in this, but in all matters of operational detail and discipline. Frankly, your efforts have been almost entirely lacking. Etzel had wanted to maintain a positive tone, but here, now, after all that had happened, she could no longer hold herself back. The wave broke through her, and she was carried along like flotsam. You're consistently apathetic, bordering on downright neglectful. The fuel problem? That's just a symptom. Throne almighty, man! Where were you when I arrived? Sleeping? Where were you each time the crew questioned me? Might as well be the same. Vaslav, you are poisonous to morale. I thought you'd lost your mind in the sprawl, ranting about Cadia's bane. The one saving grace of your conduct is that I've barely had time to worry about my own reaction to all that, because I've been too focused on watching you in case you collapse completely. Vaslav opened his mouth to speak. Etzel held up a warning finger, trembling with the effort of keeping her voice level. You are an excellent shot and a good sensorman. But even if that was all that I required of you, we would still be having this conversation. You are part of this crew, my crew, and you are failing us dismally. We need you. What we need is a commander worthy of Holtz, Vaslav growled. Holtz as he was before. Before?
Before Cadia, before we lost the fight that mattered.
Etzel slapped a hand down on the maps between them.
This fight matters, here and now. Does it? The old man didn't believe that. He told me once, near the end, that he thought we were just living out the death throes of our species. This world is a spasm, a mindless constriction. 100 Croatoas wouldn't be worth 1 Cadia. Sergeant, you stray dangerously close to heresy. I advise you to...
To what, sir?
Even if the old man was talking through a bottle, even if this poxy planet does matter, we're losing. They have Cadia's bane leading them. And what do we have? The likes of you.
If he had thought to shock or wound Etzel with his words, Vaslav missed his mark. Instead, she felt a strange sort of relief. Here it was, at last. He had no accusations to level that she hadn't already aimed at herself and disproved. Etzel could honestly say that Commander Mazenwe would have approved of everything she had done. She required no further validation. Yarrow Canyon. Because you think I ran then, and now you see me doing it again. To her surprise, Vaslav looked momentarily nonplussed. Then his face coloured with fresh anger.
I'm not an idiot. I understand duty, and I don't mistake it for cowardice.
Then what? Asked Etzel, wrong-footed.
You aren't Cadian. Not where it matters.
The Munitorum think they can scrape up the dregs of the galaxy, stuff them into Cadian fatigues, and like a miracle from the Emperor, they'll have made new Cadians. As though that makes up for never having trained in the White Shields. As though that's a fair trade for having walked the ramparts of Khazra-Helg, or fought off arch-enemy raids day on day, year on year. The planet died, and Cadian blood spills every day. Our regiments bleed away like a gunshot trench raider. And then we get watered down with the likes of you and Treve. Gates of Cadia, I bet you didn't even go through the training program to bring you up to standard, did you? Etzel couldn't keep the shock off her face. It quickly gave way to honest outrage. She felt as if the sergeant had torn off a mask, and what she saw underneath was uglier than any spine back. It's a question of us and them, is it, sergeant? Or rather us and you? Go back to your own regiment. Her words dripped scorn. Vaslav stared at her bullishly, without even the good grace to look ashamed. Etzel jabbed a finger at the darkened jungle. Out there! The enemy are out there, Vaslav. I'll keep saying it until you hear me. They sold their souls. They submitted to their fears. They gave up and made monsters of themselves. The traitors, the mutants. Emperor, save us. The heretic Astartes. We're not in our death throes. We're in the fight of our lives. And every single loyal human needs to give their all, not give in to cowardice. His lips tightened into a bloodless line. She pressed on before he could rally. I was nervous about being transferred to a Cadian regiment. Yes, I'll admit. Wasn't sure I'd live up to the reputation, no matter what my old commander thought of me. But Vaslav, I mean this sincerely. If you and your excuses and your bigotry, if they're all the Cadians have left to offer, then I was sold a poor deal. You're scared, aren't you? Scared of change, scared of the honest fight, scared that soldiers like Treve and Shallenbor and yes, even a meagre Sagoan like me will disprove this myth of Cadian exceptionalism you're clinging to. I don't, he began. She overrode him, biting out her words. I don't serve Cadia or its memory, Sergeant. I serve the God Emperor, and so do you. You will meet his expectations of what it means to be a soldier of the Imperial Guard. You will meet mine. Vaslav's throat worked. A vein pulsed at his temple. He looked like he was choking on his anger. Expression thunderous, he turned his back and stalked away towards Steel Tread. Etzel breathed hard as she fought to calm herself, to accommodate her disgust at Vaslav's attitude. Pulses of errant gravity rippled through the clearing, heralds of the storm to come. Etzel felt them snatching at the fabric of her tank suit, felt herself momentarily lighter, then heavier, as though she stood on the deck of a ship in rolling seas. Her centre of balance yawed. Etzel put a hand to the rock for support. Thunder boomed overhead. One peal rolling into the next, lightning bolts rocketed through the sky, following the tortured contours of the clouds, describing actinic spirals that rendered the sky momentarily nightmarish. Drops of warm rain began to fall, coming down in unnatural spiral patterns and stinking of ash and blood. Etzel gazed skyward, rift be damned, and felt a chill run through her. Emperor, save us. She murmured. The eclipse storm is on us. Vero squinted at his wrist chrono. He could barely see the display in the shuttered half-light of Treve's chem lantern, but thought that he'd been outside for about half an hour. He, Shallenbor, and Muretzin huddled together under the auto-warning while hot rain drummed its twitching canvas. Treve was sealing up the engine cowling. The commander was scowling at her data slate, as though it had personally offended her. The sergeant had clambered back into the tank some minutes ago, with a face like murder. Vero didn't know what had passed between the two officers,
but he could guess. His guts churned with worry. There again, he told himself. That might just be nausea triggered by the gravity pulses of the eclipse storm fooling his inner ear. Vero had been through 4 of these things now, and they had never got any less unpleasant. As he understood it, Croatoas hadn't suffered them before the rift opened. He still didn't understand why an eclipse should play havoc with gravity, or weather patterns, or why it would make the rain stink like copper and vomit. What really unsettled him, though, was how a world without a moon could suffer eclipses at all. He jumped, shaken from his reverie.